This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. Going to be with you for about 55, 58 minutes. You know, I've been concentrating on the 4th of July parade and all the work that goes into it, starting with the fire chief and the police chief, and then the people that put the parade together at WTBR and PCTV. Well, now I got a guy, you're not going to believe this. It's got to be one of the best jobs in the world, but I'm sure at times it's really frustrating. But I have with me Ray Pulver. He puts on parades all over the country for a living. And your parade won a big award.
Yes, the West Hollywood Pride Parade that we do in early June just won an Emmy Award for the best televised special events news. So we were quite pleased with that. Yeah, it was great to hear. Quite surprised and exciting.
It has to be. I mean, an Emmy. I mean, it's not like, you know, driving down the street and here's a gold star on your forehead. You did a nice job. Oh, I'm so proud of you, Ray, and I'm so happy for you.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's certainly a team effort. You know, I'm so blessed with the team that I have that we put the production down the street, and then working with the folks that I do in Los Angeles, you know, well-deserved. They did a great job with the broadcast, so we were very fortunate.
Well, and, you know, we're going to talk about just what it's like to put together a parade. Ray's from Pittsfield.
Mm-hmm. I am. Actually, I'm here in the Berkshires now as we talk, so I'm on vacation.
Yes, you are. Yeah, we won't hold that against you. But I do want to say, though, would it be safe to say you kind of cut your teeth on a 4th of July parade in Pittsfield?
Oh, definitely. That's certainly where I got my start. Yes. As a volunteer for the 4th of July parade in Pittsfield, I was involved with the parade from the early 80s through the mid 1990s. And then I went on to California, where I had my first hired position as a parade coordinator and producer for the holiday parade in San Jose. So I did that for a few years. And then 24 years ago in March, I went into my own parade production business as Upbeat Parade Productions.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you do parades all over, and there are all kinds of parades too. They're not just like a 4th of July or Gay Pride. It has all different tones.
Yeah, we do. We primarily do work with parades up and down the West Coast from Portland, Oregon, where we work with the Portland Grand Floral Parade, which is a large parade on the West Coast. Wow. Through the San Francisco Bay Area, we work with the Italian Heritage Parade in San Francisco, the Veterans Day Parade in San Francisco, the San Jose Veterans Day Parade. And then we go down to Southern California and work on the Orange May Parade. And we do the West Hollywood Pride Parade. We do the Palm Springs Festival of Lights Parade, which is a Christmas parade along with their Veterans Day Parade. We do a 4th of July parade in Las Vegas. And then we end the year with the Fiesta Bowl Parade in Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow. The Fiesta Bowl. I mean, that's got to be another just an amazing production.
Yeah, that's a big production for us. Last year I had 21 people on the street to help with the coordination of the parade. We work with float builders out of New Orleans that bring in floats, ship floats across the country to Phoenix for that parade. Last year was our first year producing the parade. We just signed a 2-year contract, so we'll be doing it for the next 2 years. And we built a great relationship with the folks at the Fiesta Bowl, and they're excited, and we're excited to continue to work and further develop that parade and hopefully get it back on a national network. It is a televised event throughout the state of Arizona, but their goal is to eventually get it back onto a national network. So we're working on that. Also working on that with the West Hollywood Pride Parade. We have a great relationship with KTLA, which is one of the most popular television stations in Los Angeles. And we're talking with the idea of possibly making that a nationally televised event. And same in Palm Springs. We're looking to branch out their broadcast. It's broadcast by the local NBC affiliate, and we're hoping to branch that out. So, yeah, I've been very fortunate. And, of course, I'm still in contact with and helping along, primarily consulting and doing some of the backside of things for the 4th of July parade in Pittsfield. So,
well, and that's what I wanted to, only one of the reasons, because Ray, when you listen to the parades he puts together, Well, this is a great parade, and it was back to what it used to be almost in size. You know, there's a lot. When you just made an interesting comment too, and I want to, what is the backside? There's the front side, the backside. For the folks that are listening, because why am I doing these exposés on parades? Here's why. Because they just don't happen. And I see how hard the parade committee works. I know you and your sister, mom, and everybody were on it for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I will talk to you about your sister off air. but seriously, there's a lot to it. I know you were in part of it here. They start planning the 4th of July parade like the 7th of July of the previous year.
Yeah, that's true. And I actually had a brief meeting with a couple of people in Pittsfield last week. So already talking and looking at next year. But so when I say the backside of things, that would be basically the office work handling, the sending out the invitations for potential entries in the parade, taking in the entry applications, reviewing the applications, accepting the applications or denying them, whatever, and then managing the information packets that go out to the parade entries. The front side would be pretty much day of. So that would be managing the putting the parade all together. Going back to the backside would include working with the local, whoever my clients may be. So I work with cities, I work with downtown associations, I work with chamber of commerces. So keeping in contact with them throughout the year as we're planning the parade, doing some consulting work with them on corporate sponsorships for the parade or different ideas, yeah, and different entries they can get into the parade, doing research. I have someone on my team who helps me with the office work, and she does research for me to find new and exciting entries that we may be able to add to parades. So that sort of thing. And then working with the cities, a lot of my clients, I work directly with cities in planning the parade, the street closures, the security. It's going to be is there any construction going on along the parade route or near the parade route, traffic detours, all sort of that sort of thing. So there, as you said, there's a lot involved in a parade. I've had people say to me, I thought people just showed up on parade day and went down the street. Yeah. And there's a lot of behind the scenes that go on to put it all together for a parade to happen.
And what we've seen, like I had the chief of police on for our 4th of July parade. Mm-hmm. It's a different world today. Mm-hmm. It's not like when I was a kid growing up, the fire trucks were all in the parade, you know? So, yeah. But now there's security of the parade route and the safety of the people. And then if you close all these streets, the chief and the fire chief and the DPW people, they also work to get alternate routes to get, mm-hmm, in case they have to get to there. And it's not an easy process.
No, it can be challenging. And as you said, in today's world, unfortunately, there's things that we have to watch for. You know, things, for example, this year I had three parades of the first four parades that we did had protesters. So we were planning for that, that possibility. Unfortunately, it happened. It wasn't anything that got out of control, but it did disrupt a couple of the parades. So we had to take care of that. But that's part of what comes up in these city meetings. A meeting I had for the West Hollywood Pride Parade, and you know, granted, that's in the LA area, but I attended a meeting that had over 100 people involved from city services. And then there was also, because of security, potential security issues with that parade, we had, you know, Homeland Security, FBI, Sheriff's Department, Police Department, you know, local hired security. So, you know, you just all have to be kind of on the same page and how do we handle things. I have a document for my team that if anything should happen, this is how our team handles it, which we basically try to step aside and immediately get security involved with any issues that we have. So that's what would happen with the protesters that we had for the three different parades, is we immediately, you know, worked together with our team and got the sheriff's department and police department involved and let them take care of the issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since your first parade, since you started 20 something years ago, what's changed?
Well, of course, the security issues. Right. You know, and I don't want to sound like it's negative. Parades are so still very exciting, very fun. People are coming out to it. We're seeing this year actually that there's more participants. All the parades I've been working with have had an increase in participation and an increase in attendance on the street, which is great to hear, you know, and see. But yeah, there's a lot of different issues. There's funding issues. Most, at least I can only speak for California, but most cities in California, when I first started my business, cities would cover the city services for the parades. So they would cover the police department costs, the city, streets and traffics and that sort of thing. But over the last 10 years, that has changed, where now all the cities are cost recovery. So if you're going to have a parade in a city, in most cities in California, you have to pay for city services. And that could range, most of the time, it could range anywhere from $25,000 to $100,000 and up, you know? And then if you look at a parade like the Tournament of Roses, you're going into the millions, you know, to for a parade like that. So so that's changed in recent years. But I think, you know, people are still excited to be part of a parade.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. It's entertaining. It brings the community together. It's a great marketing resource for a local community. Yeah. And there's a lot of different opportunities, not only for participants, but sponsors of the events to get their name out into the community more. And yeah, it's still a great, exciting thing to happen in a city, I think.
Well, this 4th of July parade was certainly better attended than several of the recent past.
Mm-hmm.
I know on North Street at some spot, there were three and four people deep. But Kona Street was a two or three people deep. I remember that as a kid. My father was a fireman.
Yeah.
And when the first parades got going, he was on that committee.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. So, yeah, we didn't miss parades. Trust me. My mother, we'd walk down Wakona Street. We lived right off Wakona. I grew up basically on Wakona Street. But I think, and I guess my thrust for this show is to have, when you're at the parade, folks, listeners and viewers, have in the back of your mind all the work that went into making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do this. And Ray, this is what Ray does for a living. So it's really important to understand that it just doesn't happen. You know, one of the things too that I've heard people when I've had them, the whole permitting process, just because it's a city authorized, it still has to get permits.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a case with all the cities, at least that we work with out on the West Coast. And there's a variety of, you know, you have to get the permit to have the parade. You have to get permits through the police department. You have to get fire department permits for inspections of floats.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a variety of permits that have to be taken out in order to have the parade. Some cities require them to come out. You know, you have to get those permits pretty early. So, and you know, it's just a process that's done. A lot of the cities I work with, fortunately, everything is relatively in one area with a city. It's a certain city department. And for example, in San Jose, it's the Office of Cultural Affairs. So when you apply to have a special event, you go to the Office of Cultural Affairs, and then they assign someone to help you manage the different permits that you need. And then they're the ones that put together meetings with the entire city department. You know, as I mentioned, you're looking at the fire department, the police department, streets and traffic. If there's public transportation, you're blocking off bus stops and that sort of thing. A couple of parades, you have to deal with rail. You know, there's parades I've worked with that you actually had to deal with railroads and contact, you know, those people. So there's a lot of different entities involved with putting a parade together, because it's much different than a street festival, where typically a street festival will take place within a couple blocks on a street, where a parade is typically 1 to 2 miles long and sometimes longer. So it's certainly a much longer area, a much larger area, I should say, when you're hosting a parade.
And I can remember they used to throw candy and all that. Well, that's for Stunkin's Day. They can't do that anymore, at least in the 4th of July parade. And I think the North Adams Parade too, but I'm thinking back. If memory serves me correctly, and I can think back that far, I can't remember where I parked the car 5 minutes ago. But I can remember one of the reasons. I can remember my father talking. One of the reasons they actually got out of doing it, it became too complicated. You know, they're all volunteers. There was issues with permitting. There were issues with insurance and all this. Well, they never really looked into it. And then all of a sudden, it was a gigantic obstacle to the next year's parade.
Yeah, and that's kind of when I got involved here in Pittsfield, is that, you know, there was a parade up through the bicentennial in 1976, and then there was no parade in 77, and then a committee was formed, which I attended that first meeting in 78. So, yeah, I think you've got a great committee in Pittsfield. They do a great job for the size of the parade. They're still going, which is, you know, truly wonderful for the city of Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're really glad to see that. But yeah, there's a lot of different things. And you had mentioned briefly about the candy tossing and stuff. I mean, that's a potential liability. And a lot of insurance companies today, if you're getting insurance for a parade, that's on the list. And they'll ask you, is anything given out? And if it is, they may not insure you. Or if they do insure you, there could be a cost increase with the insurance because it's a potential liability.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with horses or animals in a parade. If you have horses or animals in a parade, a lot of times there's insurance companies that may not insure you, or they'll request specific insurance from the equestrian riders to show you in order for them to approve the insurance.
Well, see, folks, you're learning something every day. You thought those horses could just be in the parade. They all have little insurance cards with them.
They do. And it's even, a matter of fact, I have been on a committee, an international committee regarding parades and safety. So I've been helping develop new safety guidelines that are going to come out in a national book soon. And it's a group of us. It's just not me. I've just helped contribute to it on suggested guidelines for parades, primarily for safety. And I mean, because that's a major issue today, you know, not only with events happening, but also with potential liabilities and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of things that have changed some in the parade world, but you know, it's just something you have to do today. And a lot of it's being required by cities. If they're putting them on, to permit the events, or they're required by the insurance companies.
Isn't it amazing, though, with all the, and not my term, not yours, hoops you have to jump through, you still can put on these magnificent parades?
Yeah, and I have to say, overall, yes, it seems like there's a lot of hoops, but at least in my experience, the cities you work with are really good to work. Yeah, are very helpful in that, and their understanding. I'm fortunate in the fact that as I was going into my own parade production business, I worked part-time for the city of San Jose permitting events. So I've worked both sides, where I know pretty much what cities are looking for, and I on the event side and planning the event. So I can go into a meeting with a city, and if they start asking certain questions, or I let them know what I have.
Right.
You know, for guidelines and stuff, they're, you know, they're very pleased with that information. So I think you have to be prepared if you're doing any type of event, a parade or a festival.
Yeah.
Or just go in prepared with the city to show that, you know, show the city that you know what you're planning and know what you're doing. And they're really helpful to work with because they know how important these community events are for the city.
I have a thing on the wall there from when I came back from Vietnam. I was interviewed by a reporter from the then Springfield Republican. I don't even know if it's still around, but and I said, besides family and the holidays, what I missed the most was the 4th of July parade, the fireworks. When I was a kid, the fireman's muster. With all the rise, Gillette Brothers, they're still in business. Great, great family, great organization. And it really is for young people growing up, my niece used to come from Foxwood, drive up for the day for the parade, drive up to show her kids what a long parade was. Because a lot of their parades are like 20 minutes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I admire the people who do it. And like you said, in Pittsfield, I have to say this, the parade committee, all volunteers. And it's a consuming job.
It is. Yeah, there's a lot of planning. And, you know, you talk about the 4th of July. And as you know, this year, there was a band from Ireland that came in, and they were coming over to the States, and that was on their list that they wanted to participate in a 4th of July parade. So we were fortunate enough that they were coming in to the upstate New York area, and they reached out to us. And so we made that, you know, made that happen. Yeah. And, you know, they're a great addition, but that's, yeah, there's just something about the 4th of July that's very special. It's always going to be special in my heart, because that's where I got my start, and it's just a lot of fun.
The as we go into what, and I don't want to know, you don't have to name the parade. What was the most challenging parade you've ever done, and what were the challenges?
Oh, my gosh. I would say one of the most challenging parades I have, it's an exciting parade, but it's the Italian Heritage Parade in San Francisco, only because it's a large parade with typically 90 to 100 entries. But if anybody's familiar with San Francisco at all, we start near the world famous Pier 39, Fisherman's Wharf area.
Right.
It goes along Fisherman's Wharf, and then it goes up Columbus Avenue into the North Beach area, which is considered the Italian district of San Francisco. It's a small area that we have to stay, relatively small for the size of the parade that we have, staging area. It's sometimes difficult to get the roads closed when we need them closed for the staging area. So that's a challenge from in some cases. And but what's really fun about that parade is as it goes up Columbus Avenue into North Beach, all the restaurants that are in the famous Italian restaurants in that area that are
on
the parade route offer special parade dining, and they put out tables, and you can actually make reservations for parade day to have a 3 or 4 course meal as the parade's going by. So it's really a lot of fun. But that parade for us, as much as I love it, and I've been doing it, I think this will be our 15th or 16th year producing that parade, but it does have its challenges with that. You know, I mean, we have challenges here and there. Like I said, we had the protest occur in a couple of the parades. But yeah, I mean, there's from time to time we've had breakdowns or you know, some groups may not show up or show up late, and how to get, you know, getting them into position and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's, you know, you overcome those. I try to pre-plan everything, so when we come down to parade day, it should run really well, and we can just put out the fires as they come along. So, but yeah, I would say probably that parade on our list is one of the challenging ones.
Well, I used to go once a year to San Francisco, and then flap to Concord and do a seminar for the, if I remember correctly, the California Sheriff's Association.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it was always right around, St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in March. And it was always, you're right, I really fell in love with San Francisco, especially the food.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at the size of me. I mean, I don't miss many meals. But I was there for a parade, and it was kind of disjointed in this respect. There were big gaps. I know I would be remiss if I didn't thank Markham, Lou Markham. Mm-hmm. I call him Field Marshal, and that day he was like a field marshal directing traffic. And nobody messed with the coach. I mean, trust me.
Yeah.
And but what that's a process, right? I mean, you have somebody that's calling these I mean, I saw it this year with our 4th of July parade. I never really understood the concept of how you blended them all together. And I'll give you an example. And this was the parade committee made one mistake. They made me a grand marshal, but that was a great choice. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. No, I'm still very humbled about that. Mm-hmm. But my three nephews were carrying the banner in front. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. We pulled out. They walked out. I never saw them. They just appeared.
Yeah.
It's so well orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we do with all the parades, because some people don't understand how things typically, when we stage, we merge them together. When we stage parades, and I know Pittsfield's similar, we put the music on one street, you know, we put dancers and marchers on another, we put floats on another. A lot of that also has to do with safety issues. You know, we don't want, you know, small kids or dancers in between big trucks and floats and that sort of thing. Or, you know, we keep the music on a street, so if there are equestrians, we don't want them near the horses. And so there's a method to our madness in doing it, and we just intermerge. So I have, when I have my staging team out there, I mean, I have typically three people at an intersection that are merging the groups together. So they'll pull a band from one street, they'll pull a float from another street, they'll pull marches from another street and merge them together.
Yep.
And they go out in the correct, you know, the correct order. So, and that's one of the things we try to do. And I'm kind of adamant about that, to make sure that they go out in order. Obviously, there's some cases where either an entry may not show, or for some unexpected reason, you may have to flip-flop a number. As long as the announcers get that information ahead of time, or the television team gets that information, we're good. But you were talking about some of the spacing and gaps. And we usually have marshals along a parade route to help with that. I've actually worked with some nonprofit organizations that the committee will provide, or they, if it's a chamber of commerce or whatever, may provide a donation to that organization to have marshals along the parade route. So
that's a nice
make sure that the pace of the parade continues steady, because that can happen. A parade, in my opinion, is like an accordion. You know, once you get going, you have a band that has a faster pace maybe than some a smaller group for some reason, or a pipe band has a slower pace than vehicles. Yeah. And so the tendency is, even though you tell them keep 35 to 50 feet in between entries, it's going to end up like an accordion in some cases. So what you want to do is have people walk. If any of your viewers, when they watch the Tournament of Roses, you'll see that they have what they call a white suitor that is with someone on a scooter with a float, and there's somebody walking with a band, and they're monitoring the pace of the parade as it goes down the street.
Wow. No, mm-hmm. I'm going to check for that. My son used to live in New York, and we went a couple times to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. Mm-hmm. That's very well orchestrated.
Yeah, that's quite a production. I'm actually friends with one of the executive producers of that, Wesley. And that's quite an event that they do. I admire what they do there. It's a lot of fun.
Well,
when you watch it on television, you see which is at the end of the parade when they do all the production numbers. But if you're up further, I've had and I'm sure you know when you attended it, it's, you know, it's definitely kept tighter as it goes through. So the parade actually is about an hour and a half, but on television it's 2 hours because they do the stop. But I have incorporated a couple of things that they do. And one of them is, if I have a televised event and we decide to add some sort of entertainment in it, in the parade as it's going, if we pause somebody, we typically bring them in. We give them 15 seconds to come into TV, and that's when they're being televised. They'll stop and perform for no more than 30, and then they're out. Because in parade world, if you get into a minute, you know, and you stop a parade and the rest of the parade keeps going, now you're going to have a block or two gap. And so you want to try to make sure that you don't end up with that large gap. And what we do, for example, in Palm Springs, because I have a couple acts that we stop for the broadcast, is I have someone just beyond TV from my team, actually two people just beyond where I am, and they pause the parade just beyond, so we don't have such a large gap going on.
It's folks, if you're listening, we're going to take a break here in about 30 seconds or so. But please stay tuned, because there's more to talk about. And every time I have Ray, this is the second time I've had Ray on and the parade people, I learned from even from our own Chief Dolly to, and Chief Sammons from the fire and police, the parade committee itself, WTBR, God love them, and PCTV. For them, and that show was aired. Go back and pull it if you haven't seen it. Just listen to the amount of pre-work. Every cable, every plug, everything has to be tested. And I can't say enough. Yes, I'm part of it, but you know what? If they depended on my technical skills, you'd see nothing. So we're going to take a break. This is 89.7 WTBR FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. Now, we're worked a long time and kind of hard to see if we can get that back down to channel 13 or 14 or where it used to be. So next time you pay a cable bill, tell them you like it back down in what I call Earth. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. I'm here with Ray Pulver. While it may sound like a dream job, like with any job, there are frustrations. Ray produces parades. Yes. And he cut his teeth here. He's a Pittsfield boy. Mm-hmm. He now lives on the West Coast in California. We won't hold that against him. But he started getting involved with parades with our own 4th of July parade. Mm-hmm. And now tell them about the Emmy. Come on. We got to get that out again. That, to me, I mean, that's super.
Thank you. Yes. We produced the WeHo Pride Parade, which is in West Hollywood. And we were fortunate enough to win the Emmy for special event news a week ago yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was extremely exciting for us. I knew that we had received a nomination, but to actually win the Emmy, you know, for the event was incredible. I never could have imagined that I'd be involved with a parade that would be an award winner like that.
And now, will you be at the Emmys when they have that big production, or
how they actually had the production while I was here? So that's the notification. So I will be catching up with the folks that I work with in West Hollywood when I get back at some point. But yeah, I woke up to the text message because it actually happened on Saturday night. I woke up Sunday morning with a text message from the gentleman that hires us to manage the parade and also the executive producer of the television broadcast. To let me, he said, I'm sorry for the late night email for you, but he said, I just want you to know we won an Emmy. So that was, I was beside myself about that. That was exciting, and kind of an emotional, you know, because I could have never imagined that something like that would happen. So,
but you know, again, when something like that, it just reinforces you've been doing the right thing. Just a production of a parade, and folks, for those that are just tuning in, we'll repeat a little bit of what we talked about earlier. One of the things that I found astonishing, and Ray said this when I interviewed him last year, and it never crossed my mind, but those of you who watch realize that that's not a big, vast, open space. you can't put music bands around horses,
right?
Mm-hmm. In equestrians, and you know, I never thought of that. And it's like anything, the detail is in the minutia.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of different things in planning the lineup of the parade that you have to watch for. You know, you try to avoid antique cars with some that may have a lot of exhaust,
right?
You know, near either a band or a musical unit musical unit or a dance unit or whatever. So there's a lot of different things that you have to watch for. That's why on our applications, we ask for specific information so we know. And we also ask if they have any special requests or comments. And in that area, it's if they need to be up close, you know, do they need to be close to the front of the parade? Some groups want to be at the back of the parade. So we try to accommodate as much as we can. I'm very cautious with groups that come in. If I know it's a group that may have younger children with them, I try to put them up in the front, near the front of the parade, or elderly people, put them up towards the front of the parade and then work back from there. So, you know, just to try to accommodate people so everybody can have fun and not worry about, you know, getting ill or a long wait and that sort of thing.
Well, I also would be remiss if we didn't congratulate. I mentioned Lou Markham. God, he was with the parade. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. you know, he went to school with Washington, George. Actually, when I was a kid growing up, Lou Markham was a few years older than I am. And he was like our idol. I mean, he was a great athlete. He was a good guy. He wasn't a bully. Like, we had a lot of bullies, trust me. Mm-hmm. But all the other people who've been on that parade committee forever, Sue Rock, and most especially, I have to thank Peter Marchetti. Mm-hmm. Peter has been the president of the parade group, whatever, for a very long time. I can remember he came on the show, I think it was 3, maybe 4 years ago. Oh, COVID, I'm all messed up. But, yeah. We might not have had a parade.
Yeah.
Funding was not hitting the spots. Mm-hmm. And he came on the show, and this is a credit to the people of Pittsfield and Berkshire County and its organizations and its businesses, and just put out a plea. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, the cash was coming in.
Yeah, which is great. And like you said, it's a testament to the community and how important this event is. And yeah, Pete's been great. I mean, I've known Pete for a long time, because he was on the committee when I was on the committee. He came in, it was soon after, you know, his school days, and really learned a lot, and thankfully kept the event going. So,
yes.
You know, he's been terrific, and I've talked to him often about the parade, and will continue to do so.
Yeah, he needs, now he's got, you know, he stepped out of the president of the parade committee. So, mm-hmm. Got some part-time job now. But for those people that want to be part of it, I'm just going to tell you, reach out to people that you may know on the parade committee or whatever. And they're always looking for volunteers. Always.
Yeah. And, that's really, that's very important. And it's a fun, you know, it's, yeah. Certainly a fun event to be part of. Yes, there's times, you know, as you're planning, it may be a little struggle, but yeah, it's a great opportunity. I mean, I started as a volunteer and, you know, was on that committee for, it was either 15 to 20 years before I headed west. So, you know, it was a great opportunity for me. I tell people to volunteer anytime I'm talking. I've had the opportunity to talk with college students that are trying to get into special events industry, and I'll tell them to come volunteer. And I've actually had college students come as part of my team, and I put them on my team just so they can learn the logistics and how things operate with a special event. So, you know, certainly it's giving back to your community and an exciting way, in my opinion. So, yeah.
There's no question about it. And how, this may seem like a silly question, but I've got a bunch of them here, so don't let this destroy you. How has technology influenced the parade, the production of parades?
Well, we were talking earlier about the backside. I use all online entry applications, so you don't have to. We used to, you know, make up the application, print them, you know, print out hundreds of them, go to the post office and mail them off. Everything's online now, so you fill out the entry application online. I have invested in the database system that I work with, where when they fill out an entry application, I get an email, I go in and I can download it directly into my database, so everything is in there that I need. And then I just work off of that. And then from the database, once we do all the lineup and put the numbers in and what they're going to be, I can, and this was the first, I think this year was the first time they did it in Pittsfield because I used my system. Yeah. And we actually sent out all the parade staging packets via email. So they got all their, for yeah. each individual entry. So it would go to them, you know, if they were with the, you know, XYZ dance team, it would come in and what, it's a staging letter that says the XYZ, yep. XYZ dance team, you know, is entry number 25. You're staging on this street. This is your report time. It had all the guidelines and information and how to get in and out and the maps and all that. It was all contained in one email, but it was specific to them. But with a press of a button, I can send out 100 of those in one shot.
Yeah, I got one of those telling me where to be, when to be, how to get there because mm-hmm. things were blocked.
Right.
Again, folks, why am I doing this? Because so many people enjoy the parade mm-hmm. and a lot. And I want to thank the Eagle for mm-hmm. putting, you know, your contributions in. The Berkshire Eagles always been a hometown. Well, I take that back. It's back being a hometown newspaper. It went goofy for a while, but now it's back. Fred Rudberg and Kevin Moran, gee, I'll tell you, mind is a terrible thing to lose. If you find mine, just drop it by Peter Marchetti's house. But yeah, technology does that. And, you know, now to very few parades when I was a kid, mm-hmm. Macy's and Rose Bowl were the only parades I remember ever on television.
Yeah, I mean, they were the nationally televised ones. There's some other nationally televised as well. You know, you talk about technology and, of course, the computer and internet. So you can easily watch a parade that's being televised in a city. So, for example, the West Hollywood parade that we do, it's televised throughout Southern California. However, you could sit here in Pittsfield on your computer and watch it through their television yeah. network. So that's kind of changed. And the other thing that's changed too, and I have some parades doing this, is use of QR codes. I have one parade in Southern California that actually they develop a QR code. And of course, for those who know, you click on that with your camera and then it brings you to a page where you can be a judge. So they actually have audience participation in judging oh, wow. entries in the parade. So that all goes into a database system after the parade. And then they tally up and they give out an award for, you know, audience favorite entry.
Oh, how cool.
So that's something that was developed. And I've actually have a couple other parades that I've introduced that to. And they're having a good time with it. It's something different. So people could be there with their cell phone as the parade's going by and click and say, this is one of my favorite or my favorite. And it goes into a system. And by the end of the parade, they have the winner of the parade. So, I mean, some parades still have judging, but this particular parade eliminated the judging and they decided to have the audience judge.
Just an aside, if you have time, it's called Forgiven. It's playing at the old VFW. And it's a play about a parole hearing where the audience determines whether the person gets paroled.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, written by the great playwright. I just had him on the show.
Oh, good.
Mark St. Germain. Yeah, he wrote Freud's Last Session, Best of Enemies. Mm-hmm. But that's... Everything is evolving, I think.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And you know, even down to, at least on the West Coast with the professional float builders that we work with, I mean, the technology they're using to create some of the things that they put on the floats and, you know, the sculptures or, you know, signage and design-wise yeah. is all done, is mainly done via computer. So, yeah.
And what's, as you go back now and look, at the parades you've been involved with, a lot of parades, and I asked you the most challenging. What was the most rewarding? Well, obviously, you won it just to win an Emmy. That's the most. Yeah. But prior to winning the Emmy, what was the most rewarding parade you've done?
You know, I mean, I don't know that I have a favorite. They're all fun. I mean, yeah. To have been asked to do the West Hollywood parade, you know, prior to that award, was an extreme honor for me. I never thought that I would be involved with a parade in Hollywood, and to have the opportunity to meet some of the people, the participants, yeah. You know, it's heavy with celebrities, and so, you know, that's fun to see that. I just, each parade is different. I mean, we have a parade. We were talking the other day when I met with Pete about themes, and there's a couple of parades that I work with that have a theme, and whatever the theme is, all the participants just follow that theme. Yeah. Where you have costuming. So this year with the Orange May Parade in the city of Orange in Southern California, it fell on May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you theme. And they decided to do a Star Wars theme. And it was incredible to see the costuming that people came up with, the floats that look like, you know, all these little miniature Star Wars spaceships and stuff like that. It was incredible. And I just get so much joy out of that, to see how creative people can be and really follow the theme throughout. So I'm trying to encourage some of the other parades that I work with. We did it this year for a 4th of July parade in the city of Fremont. And I happened to be on site for that one. And we had peace, love, and Fremont. So it was kind of a 60s, 70s theme. And we have members of a Harley Davidson group that kind of lead the parade. And they were all dressed in long hair wigs and tie-dyed shirts, and that was the lead of the parade, and they did it all on their own. And we had a lot of groups that really followed the theme, and we had created special helium balloons that floated that had, you know, love and peace and all that on the logo. So I think that's, you know, to me those are even more fun in some ways, because to see a community like that come together and really think out of the box. And I encourage any of the parades that I do, yeah. I try to let the entries think out of the box and be creative, because in my opinion, the more creative you are, the more the audience is going to remember that entry in the parade, you know, and instead of just a group of people walking down the street. And if you can come up with something creative, fun, and different, people will react to that and say, oh gosh, I remember. And in Palm Springs, we've had the local library used to do a library cart brigade. So they would dress up carts, and they would dress like elves because it was Christmas, and they would do a little drill going down the street with the library carts that they used to have. So, you know, different things like that people remember. And it's right. That's why I always encourage people to really think out of the box and do something fun and creative and be memorable to the audience.
And, you know, they do a lot here with pre-parade, with pictures, theme. I really like the theme piece rather than just it's a parade on the 4th of July. What's the theme? And through the years, they've done some really, really wonderful thing. And one of the things, being a 4th of July and being a veteran, I gotta thank Peter Marchetti for this too. He moved the veterans up front. Mm-hmm. We always, I can remember, we're always in the back.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, it's a great move. I do the same thing with 4th of July parades that we work with on the West Coast, is I always have the veterans, you know, within the first 20 entries or so in the parade.
The, now, just try to describe to me, which is, you know, unless you got crayons, I'm lost. how do you determine the lineup? That to me is, it's always baffled me, but you know me well enough, doesn't take a lot, but it's gotta be a pretty thorough thought out, well thought out process.
Yeah. In most cases it is. I mean, I use color coded cards and, you know, lay them out and start with bands. I like to start a parade off with a big bang, to say, here we are, let's go, you know, and usually it's includes a big band and a you know, good size float and some other entertaining units. And then it may taper off a little bit, then it comes back up again. So it's kind of like this roller coaster type deal where you want to keep the audience's interest. In the parade, and then of course end it with a big bang because it's the grand finale, and say, you know, here we are, we'll be, and that's the show for you. And so yeah, it takes some time and try to even things out throughout the parade, but yeah, it's a process, and especially for the bigger ones, the bigger parades and the televised parades, you know, it could take a little bit more time for that. And of course, again, there's certain things that we have to accommodate, be it you know, in West Hollywood, it may be celebrities, you know, based on schedules and how, okay, well, we got to put them towards the front, we got to put them toward the back or whatever. So and even things out. And it's the same with some other parades as well. So and I mentioned earlier with the entry application where we, if they have any special accommodations. So we try to, we certainly try to do that in the lineup to make sure that they're what they had requested. It may not always work, but we try to catch that and help them out.
I also liked what you said too about the performances, even if they're at the TV review station or whatever. 30 seconds, you gotta, otherwise, because it's a ripple effect.
Yeah, it is. And when I first went out to California, it was very popular to have entries stop and perform for up to 2 minutes in front of the judges. My philosophy is don't perform just for the three or five judges that are on a reviewing stand. Perform for the 10, 20, 50, 100,000 people along the whole entire parade route. So that's who matters, in my opinion. Not to take away anything from the judging process, but to me, you want to entertain the whole entire time you're on the route. So we encourage even dance groups that if they're doing a routine, they do it as they're moving, and do it in a short loop, because as you're moving down the street, your audience is changing. So you don't have to do a full 2 minute song. You can do a 30-second song and let it keep looping. And then the audience, as you're going down the street, the audience is changing. So they're not seeing, you know, what was seen 30 or 40 seconds ago. They're seeing what's in front of them.
That's a, you know, thank you for all, and you know, folks, I think we're finding out through Ray and through the police chief and the fire chief and Sean and Matt, Tucker. Matt Tucker is the production guy for PCTV and WTBR, and it just, you know, it's great that you go with your chair and your grandkids or your kids. And I like to sit in front of St. Joseph's Church. It has everything an old man like me needs. It has food, drink, and a bathroom, so, and shade. But to put a parade of this size, Ray does it for a living. We have a lot of people here with Ray, and Ray still contributes. They start planning for next 4th of July parade, like the 5th or 6th of the right after the last parade.
And actually for Pittsfield, just kind of a preview is that we've already sent out the entry applications for music, and we have three groups signed up for 2025 already for Pittsfield's 4th of July parade next year.
Well, we'll see if the Irish come back.
If not, we'll find something else, that's for sure.
When
We'll
I
keep
was a
going.
kiddo growing up in Pittsfield alone, and probably when you're not, I'm a little bit older than you are, like four generations, but they used to have three or four drum and bugle corps just in Pittsfield.
Yeah, there
They're
used to
always
be,
great.
I think at one time back in the 50s, from what I understand, there used to be up to seven drum corps between 50s
Maybe
and
it
60s.
could have been. Yeah, I remember
Yeah,
the
and I know.
interstate in.
Yes, they did. And you know, a lot of people have asked about that. You know, why can't we get the drum corps back? There's truly a limited amount of drum corps left going. And those larger corps that we used to bring in years ago, some of them are no longer around,
They don't
or
exist.
they're heavily involved with the Drum Corps International Tour. So, for example, this year on the 4th of July, because I have been connected with Drum Corps International through my work with the Santa Clara Vanguard. So I know several people in the office, and I contacted them about the Pittsfield Parade. You know, how can we get Pittsfield into the
Right.
schedule? But unfortunately, there was no Drum Corps International show scheduled in New England the week of the 4th of July. So none of the cores were out and available. So so those are some of the things that we have to look at. And also, too, their transportation costs have gone up extremely. You know, their availability to come in, which a lot of them enjoy a day off to do something fun like a parade, but it just depends on their schedule. And also, Drum Corps International now has started their season 2 weeks later than what they used to. They used to start it about mid-June or the third week in June, but now it's really kicking off the first week in July, usually around the 1st of July or so. So it really has changed the whole schedule of trying to get some of these big drum and bugle corps into the area. So, you know, I mean, we'll keep working on it and see if we can get a couple of them involved. We did have the Sunrisers, which is an all age group, which is now part of Drum Corps International. They came into the parade this year, but you know, we had to provide housing. Pete was great in locating housing at Taconic High School for them for a few days. And that's typical where when these larger groups come in, you have to provide them housing, you know, they need a rehearsal field, and it's not always easy to find the availability and, or, you know, there's expense to them. So it increases not only just what you're paying them for an appearance fee, but also you, on top of that, you have to pay in most cases for housing at the school and, you know, some cases, the use of the field. I know being involved with the Vanguard on the West Coast, just for them to rehearse in a location for a day or two could have cost them as much as $5,000 for the use of a school facility and the field. And a lot of the school districts today, I don't know that it's true here, but in the West Coast, they charge for each room that you use. So if a drum corps is going to house in a school, they have to they get a charge for the gymnasium, they get a charge for use of the showers, they get a charge for use of a field or two. So it all adds up, and that's where it comes up to the fees that, you know, it costs. So anyway, but we're trying to get some of those different type of entries back into the parade if we can, but it is truly based on scheduling, and it's not easy anymore the way it used to be years ago.
And there's not the quantity of them. I mean, just in Pittsfield alone, I think there's maybe one that I can, but you know, in closing, we brought the Mummers and that other band whose name escapes me now.
Wofat.
Well, I have to tell you, the night before they play, it was that at the Methodist Church. It was an amazing concert, both bands.
I strongly encourage people to go to that concert if they can.
I won't miss it again.
And see it because, you know, they're a lot of fun. Both of those bands are two of the ones that have committed for 2025. So, you know, it's just a lot of fun. It's another night out. We used to do it years ago when the Mummers came up, when I was involved with the 4th of July parade here and had the Mummers come up and do a concert. So I strongly encourage it because they're a lot of fun. It's a truly entertaining couple of hours that they perform.
It was a wonderful evening. Mm-hmm. Ray, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I know you're visiting family and friends and working. I wanted people to hear from you about what it takes to put this all together. I've had Peter on, you know, Peter's, he does so much, but he doesn't blow his own horn, you know, and, but sometimes you got to like, pull it out.
Well, they do a great job. And I just, you know, before we close real quick, I just want to strongly ask the citizens of the area to, you know, really support the parade committee. I mean, they do a great job. It's such an important event. It's one of the oldest 4th of July parades in the nation. Right. So, you know, whatever you can to support it, either financially or volunteering, whatever, would be a great help. And certainly try to keep this tradition going.
Ray, you're a wonderful guy. And please tell Pat I pray for him daily.
I will do that. For sure. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, it's my pleasure. Okay. You're a true professional. Well, folks, I got a couple of announcements. Ray, you can go or you can stay. It doesn't make any difference. It's entirely up to you.
Okay, I got to step out, but thank you again so much. It was a pleasure.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, Ray. Thank you. All right, a couple of things I want to announce. The 21st Century Jewish Community Playwright, fellow Wayne Firestone, is proud to announce a new 10-minute play festival that seeks to heal the world. It's called Oof. And It's really going to be cool. Tickets are available at the Berkshire Theater Group. It's August. I want to make sure I get my time. It's August 16th. But call the. There's so much going on. I have to tell you, it's the Festival of New Jewish Plays. Plus, there's all kinds of things going on. So please call the Berkshire Theater Group. 413-997-4444 and become part of it. And really and truly, there's so much going on in the community. And, you know, right now we need to be healing. We need to become America again, land of the free, home of the brave. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Also, Flight of the Monarch. Can't beat it. Flight of the Monarch. That's happening right now down at Shakespeare and Company. It's a modern play. Please get down to see it. Some great people are in it. It's at matinees. Make sure you see it. There's another thing that I really support heavily. And that's the Memory Cafes. They third Wednesday of the month. Vrio Senior Center is for people having some memory issues, caregivers, and people with mild cognitive impairment or memory loss. So go down there, call the Vrio. They can tell you all about it. And really and truly, there's so much going on in the Berkshires. During the summer, support the arts. Forgiven is a play written by Mark St. Germain, and it is playing now at the old VFW on Linden Street. God bless. Take care of each other. That's all that we have. Let's really think about it. Make somebody smile. Make somebody's day a little bit brighter. It'll make you feel better. Take care. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Keep on, keep on.